This podcast is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, and it's also proud to be from Texas. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is the 2B2 podcast. Daddy, Dave,
and Steve are awesome.
Both my quarterbacks, I have Andy Dalton, and I might have to turn off that fan, man. It's not cold, it's just a little bit chilly. I'm going to turn it down a little bit. I'm afraid it might get hot if I turn it off. Quarterbacks are Andy Dalton and
He kind of talks like Kermit the Frog for his Indianapolis Colts. I can't think of his name right now.
Andrew Luck. Yeah. I got, Andy Squared as my quarterbacks. And they were both on bye week last week. And, it's a keeper league, right?
Yeah.
And so, two of my keepers are on injured reserve. Well, it gives us one injured reserve slot that we can move somebody down. But I couldn't afford to cut anybody to make space. So, I was just kind of screwed. I went into last week just knowing, okay, this is going to be a loss. And it should have been a game that I should have won because it's another dude with a really bad record. And it's just ridiculous.
That's kind of how I've been. Because I will start a quarterback. I think I told you last week. I'll start my quarterback. The guy on the bench will have a great game, so I'll start him the next week.
Yeah.
And then he'll do terrible and the guy on the bench does. But then I keep doing that. Finally, I'm just leaving my lineup as it is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of the same here. I've had it before where it's playing Andrew Luck, and he's usually my go-to guy. Playing Andrew Luck, and he'll be playing like crap for a couple of weeks. So I'm like, I'll swap him out and put in Andy Dalton because Andy Dalton's been kicking butt. And then, that weekend, Andy Dalton will ultimately fail. And Andrew Luck goes off for 40 something points. And it's oh, that was great. It's kind of I don't know. I've gotten to where a lot of times it'll say optimize your lineup. And I'm okay. Yeah, sure. Here, you can optimize my lineup for me and tell me.
Well, I've had it some. There's a player on your bench that's projected to outscore so-and-so. I'm okay, I'll go switch it.
Yeah.
And then guess what happens? The person I take out has a big week.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just I just give up. I just make sure I got everybody in there that's healthy and cross my fingers that I don't get beat by 200 points.
Yeah, yeah.
I've almost got beat by 100 points this year once.
Good grief, yeah. Man, really?
Somebody blew up and had 170, 190.
Oh, yeah.
A down week.
Yeah. Is it a points per reception league, the PPR league?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Man, you got a lot of notes over there. I didn't hardly do anything.
No, this is even, I didn't even write this down for the podcast.
Oh, really?
This is just my obsession.
This
is my obsession.
Before we go any further, hey, everybody, welcome to 2BT. I'm David.
I'm Michael.
Okay. First, before we go down the rabbit hole, I'm going to title this episode, Thanks, Martin.
Yeah.
Thanks, Martin, for giving me an obsession and, leading me down a rabbit hole this past week. That is all. And before we jump into that, I didn't take any notes at all because I want to do a, whole dedicated show to that and just be blah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Hardcore.
But, yeah.
Into it. Yeah. Be better prepared because, I want to say two things before we get into talking about this obsession.
All right.
And thanks. Yeah. And Ronnie kind of chipped in too, saying, come down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly.
Come to the crazy town. And I don't necessarily think it's all crazy what we're about to talk about.
It seems to me there's a lot of
there is
hard scientific facts to back it up.
Now, when you listen to that, West guy, and I told you I listened to his interview yesterday when I was at work. He even says there are a lot of Looney Tunes out there.
Yeah.
But, Dave, on Friday.
Yeah.
I had a really short day going to work. Kids got out of school at 11.
Oh, wow.
And it was Lila's weekend to come over here and stay the weekend with Grandma.
Yeah.
So we're grab the kid from school, go to Grandma's, and my wife's been wanting to see this movie, The Girl in the Spider Web.
Oh, okay.
So we went to Alamo Draft House,
yeah,
which I'd never been to.
Yeah, it's a nice place, man.
I really like the, I just like the decorations. They have the old school.
All the old school movie posters and stuff.
I took a lot of pictures of them, just that's cool. Yeah. I'll never see that. That movie is good. Claire Foy is in it. She's the girl.
What is that about?
I sound like my grandmother. That boy, that girl. No, she's the lady that plays Queen Elizabeth in The Crown on Netflix.
Okay.
And this is they're calling it a soft reboot of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh.
If you ever saw that.
I haven't seen that. I've heard about the book, and I've heard that the book is really, really good.
First movie's good. I think the American version had Daniel Craig, I think, in it.
Yeah.
I'm probably wrong. It's been a long time since I saw it. It's dark, gritty, and after watching it, and Claire Foy is great in it. My wife loved it. My oldest daughter loved it.
Yeah.
I would call her this character. I would describe her, if you're not familiar with it.
Yeah.
She's a combination between the Punisher.
Yeah.
And Mr. Robot.
Sounds cool.
And her thing is she goes after bad dudes because that is pretty grim, her backstory, but it's awesome. I mean, talking about some suspense and kick butt, and she's pretty, she's fearless.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. I recommend it.
I'd heard a few people talk about it, and it's one of those I haven't seen any previews for or trailers for, or whatever you want to call it. I haven't seen any of that. I want to see it just from, like, especially after hearing you talk about it and giving it high praise. But, like, dude, there's so many movies out right now that I want to go see. I want to go see Last Man.
Yeah. See, we don't go to movies either. This is one of those movies. Like, my wife's like, I want to see this movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, let's go see it, because we never go to the movies.
Yeah.
I mean, the last movie I saw was, I went with you.
Let's go see Solo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And before that, it was Ready Player One. And
oh, Last Jedi. Yeah. Yeah. I always forget
about Ready Player One. I always wait to watch movies. But anyhow, okay.
Yeah.
No. I highly recommend that. I know Jay and Dennis from Best of the Rest, they actually have read the comic book series.
And
they speak highly of it on their show. I've not looked at that, but.
And that's the Girl in the Spiderweb?
Yeah, that whole millennium, some millennium series.
Okay.
But I love that. And then I had one more quick thing before.
No, you're fine. I've got some stuff to talk about.
I had a revelation a transcendent experience after the movie.
Really?
My wife loves sushi.
Okay.
Do you eat sushi?
God, no.
I don't eat sushi. I tried it. It's just nothing against it. I like the fish. I like the rice, but I just don't like.
Yeah. See, my thing is I don't like seafood, period. So I'm not eating fish, basically.
Well, we went to this place. She wanted that. I'm like, okay, we're going to go somewhere. This place that she wanted to go to. She'd been there one time, and it's not a chain. It's called Komodo Loco.
Okay. Yeah. I know.
You know where that is?
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. And it's there in happy hour. It's in Denton off the square to the east. Hard to find spot. If you don't know where to look, it's a hole in the wall.
Yeah. Cause it's kind of like off of one of the side streets even, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's on a side street. Yeah. Down near Harvest House.
Yeah.
We went in there. I was looking forward to it, but I wasn't, but they had happy hour where all the appetizers were half off.
Oh yeah.
And they had these little, you know what a bao is, sandwich? It's like a, how do I describe it? I'm blanking on it. It's like a steamed bun.
Oh, kind of like a dumpling type thing?
Yeah, but it's a thicker, denser. The bun is, it's a steamed bun.
Okay.
How I describe it. And I got two of those.
Yeah.
One was a fried pork belly.
Oh.
And the other one was a chicken.
Yeah.
And for awesome. Those. Awesome.
So just for people that don't know, a fried pork belly or pork belly is going to be basically bacon.
Yeah.
So,
but the thing that blew my mind, and I'm never going to want to go to a Wingstop or anywhere and eat any kind of wing again.
Really?
It ruined me. They had fried duck wings, KFD duck wings.
Kentucky Fried Duck.
They're like this long. Anybody can't see.
So I'm about 4 inches?
About 4 inches long or bigger. Some of them were, and they're big. Looks like eating a chicken wing, a chicken leg. Amazing.
Really?
Just downright, it blew me away.
They throw them in like hot sauce and stuff like that or whatever?
It's like it's just like a really super spicy Asian. And I was stupid. I didn't get it. The name Komodo Loco. It's a fusion between Mexican like seasonings and Asian dishes.
I wouldn't have put it together either.
It's great. They had these egg rolls.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, egg rolls are good.
Yeah.
Egg rolls with chorizo.
Whoa. Did I get you there? Yeah, you just said the magic
word. Like a little mini, also being burrito, but yeah. Better. Like actually good ingredients.
Yeah. So almost like a chimichanga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dumpling. Oh, God. It's so good.
Yeah.
But I can only go to there during half happy hour.
Oh, yeah. Because
then you can get
all the appetizers. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sounds amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
There's very few times that I actually will sit there and tell the waiter when you come up to pay the bill, because we don't even go out to eat much. I'm like, this was amazing.
Yeah.
I actually told my wife, this is the best meal I've had in over a year. Over a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's freaking awesome.
I mean, I woke up the next morning thinking about these duck wings. Seriously, it's crazy. Yeah.
Wanted another bow and some more duck wings.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah, oh gosh, yeah.
KFD, stuff. I like that.
KFD, Kentucky Fried Duck.
Yeah. I've never really had duck all that much, man.
A lot of people don't like it. I've had it two or three times.
Yeah.
A Thai place I go to.
Yeah.
They have good duck.
I've had it one time before, and I mean, I dug it. Like, I enjoyed it, but it was only the one time before. It does have a little bit of a different taste.
My wife
a
hates
more,
it.
More greasy or whatever.
Greasy, wild. I've watched, a lot of duck hunters don't even eat duck. They just go shoot ducks. I watched a Bourdain once, and he was like, went out with these duck hunters, and he did the whole thing where he had to go sit out in the blind and didn't shoot anything. So they had ducks on standby in case they didn't shoot anything and bring it in. He's like, he's asking these guys, you ever eat duck? No, don't like it.
Really?
But you go out and kill them.
Yeah, see, that's where I have issues. Like, I'll be honest, man, I don't mind you killing stuff. I don't.
Yeah.
Eat the stuff that you kill, though. That's the whole point of killing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, don't go out to kill something just to kill something, though.
If you're killing for fun, you got something wrong with you. Right. I mean, I get the exhilaration of hunting.
You're one step away from being the kid.
You need to eat what you kill.
Yeah.
Or give it to somebody.
Give it to charity or something like that. Don't just.
But Bourdain showed these guys how to cook a duck, and they were like, it blew their minds.
Really?
He said, there's a way. It's easy to mess up, I guess. I've never cooked it. I don't know.
Yeah, I've never even seen, like, the only way I would see it is, like, there's one thing, like, since we're getting close to Thanksgiving, there's one thing I would like to try sometime.
What's that?
That's the turducken.
That kind of...
The turkey,
I don't know
duck,
what
and chicken.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know. I mean, it's just a...
It seems like a part of me says that might be good, and another part of me says that's an abomination against nature.
Yeah, well, it's just a turkey with a duck shoved up its butt with a chicken shoved up the butt of the duck. So it's like, it's basically just... I mean, that's all it is, really. But, I mean...
You going to try it?
I want to. They're expensive, man. You ever seen them in the store? Like $80.
Oh,
man.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not buying one. Like, the only way I do it is if somebody else buys it.
I thought you'd just make one.
Oh.
Get you a turkey. Get you a duck.
Yeah.
Get you a little Cornish game hen.
Whenever I was about like.
You can go really far. You get a turkey, duck, chicken.
Yeah.
And then get a little tiny Cornish game hen and stick inside the chicken. I don't know what you'd call that.
I don't know.
Because they sell those things. You ever see those at the supermarket?
Oh, yeah.
They're tiny.
Turduck core.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
I like it. No, but what was it? I was going to tell you, this is going to get graphic, everybody. Whenever I was about like, I was young. I was like single digits, man. Like before 10, obviously, because it's the first double digit, but like dad had a buddy, this guy by the name of Wade Hurd, and he raised turkeys. And so we all went out there one weekend before Thanksgiving. And there was a bunch of people out there, and people were out there just picking their turkeys, right? And there's a big cauldron of boiling water with a giant fire underneath.
Me going out to the pasture, you look tasty. Come with me.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to eat you.
Yeah, I didn't know what we were picking out a turkey. I was like, that one looks kind of cool.
Oh, let's take that one home.
Yeah.
You probably thought, oh boy, I'm going to have a turkey right
around
the backyard.
And so next thing you know, they get like a pin full of turkeys with a couple of dudes in the middle of it, and there's a stump and an axe, and they just thunk and then sling it, dude. And like, yeah, it's.
So they got hold of the bird.
They got a hold of the bird's feet, chop its head off, and then just basically toss it. And if they land on their feet, like, you ever heard of the term running around with like a chicken with its head cut off? It really happens. It really happens. Yeah. It's kind of crazy because like, I, and like I said, this is graphic. So if you want to fast forward for 15 seconds, like it was messed up to see these birds run around without a head and just like blood squirting out of the top of it. And their freaking arms like flapping. Like, but you know, I mean, like it got used.
See, we're so far removed from our food now.
Oh yeah.
I mean, my grandmother, she made chicken. She cooked a really good chicken. My mom's mom.
Yeah.
But I remember her telling me, she said she hated chickens because she was always the only one that had to kill them.
Yeah. Had to go out and
wring their neck, chop their head off, or like take them and swing them. Yeah. Wring their neck. She hated it.
If I remember right, I'm pretty sure I saw Ma wring a chicken's neck one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what the hell just happened? Yeah.
Yeah. But I kind of respect the nearness to, you gotta, I mean, if you can sit there and eat something.
Yeah.
And you gotta know where it comes from.
Oh God. Yeah.
This prepackaged culture we have. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, I've had this thought. I'm like, I really don't need to eat this.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I make my living partly off of the suffering of animals. let's just say what it is. I raise cattle to sell to feed to people.
But that's what gets me. Okay. So I wouldn't say that y'all make your living off the suffering of animals because y'all are treated humanely.
No, we don't.
Yeah, very well taken care of. And that's what gets me is like, you always see these videos put out by PETA and it's like, this is how these cows are raised. And it's like,
oh no, ours are like, I'd love to be living there. They got everything they want.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at is like, not all cows are like you. There might be a select few that's
talking about the ones that are in the pens
that they show in the pens. And they're like, this is how they spend their entire life. And it's like, no, have you ever seen the whole thing with the goldfish? You keep the goldfish in a small bowl. Mm-hmm. It's not going to outgrow that bowl. You put the goldfish in a big pond and the goldfish gets huge.
Yeah.
Why is that? It's because they adapt to their enclosures. Kind of the same thing with just about any freaking animal. Like you keep a lot of cows in a freaking pen that's way too small for them, then they're not going to grow that big. Most of them are grown in like, that's what gets me whenever it's like a, you know, grass fed beef. And I was like, well, those things have probably been grazing on a lot of grass, but then they've also had some fillers and stuff like that too to put weight on them. But I don't know.
But you're not a hunter. I'm not a hunter.
I'm not a hunter.
I've helped people that are hunters. I mean, I've helped butcher a deer.
Yeah.
I've aided in that. I mean, and I still eat meat.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. I don't think it kind of ties into what we've been obsessing with. I don't think we would survive very long if there was a big, what's that one guy call it? A big, solar flare. He called it an event.
I've got it pulled up.
Did you have it pulled up?
I do. Hold on just a second. I do want to touch base on something real fast before we get into that.
Yeah.
Happy Veterans Day.
Yes.
By the way.
Happy Veterans
Day. Happy Veterans Day in 100 years since the end of World War One.
Today.
Yes.
Sunday, we're being recorded. November 11th, 11, 11.
11, 11. 1918 was whenever it
ended. And I think they signed it at 11-11.
Yeah. The 11th day of the 11th month of the 11th hour.
Yeah.
So I had this whole thing I was going to do on that, but I'm not going to worry about it. Let me see this. Because I actually pulled up Robert Schock, his website, and what was it called? SIDA, S-I-D-A, Solar Induced Dark Age.
Yeah.
Where basically like solar flares, and he was even saying something about like, what, in 1856 or whatever?
It was just before the Civil War. Yeah. There was a big one, the Carrington event, Carrington. I looked it up.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, one happened not long ago that actually shut down part of the grid up in Canada or something like that.
Really?
I was looking into it. You know, I wish I had time to actually sit down for an entire day and trace all these things and like verify some of the information even more.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it's a, cause we were just part of what happened was last week we were talking and we got into this spear point that was found down at Buttermilk Creek complex down near Waco Temple area that predates the Clovis culture, which
Clovis first,
the academics.
Yeah. Yeah.
I keep hearing the academic, or as the West guy, like the quackademics, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make fun of it because I understand why they think that because that's what they've known.
Yeah.
But, we found their stuff. They found 15,000 different artifacts alone that predate Clovis down in Buttermilk Creek complex.
Really?
Yeah.
Good grief.
And it pushes it back to 2,000 to 3,000 years earlier than what we thought.
Yeah.
So.
And that's what gets me is like, I understand that like lots of guys have done their doctorate work mm-hmm. and whatever on all this stuff. And I understand the pushback on it, but at what point in time does it come to where it's like, we have so much evidence now. How can you keep, continue to push back? You know, how can you continue to keep saying, no, that's not possible. No, this is false. No, that's not possible. No, this is false. I did get the Carrington event pulled up. It says, the solar storm of 1859, also known as the Carrington event, was a powerful geomagnetic solar storm during solar cycle 1855 to 1867. A solar coronal mass ejection, the CME, hit the Earth's magnetosphere and induced one of the largest geometric storms on record, September 1st through 2nd, 1859. Now, they said that there's reports that whenever this coronal mass ejection hit, that it actually set some telegraph machines on fire from the just the force of it. That you know, it knocked out all the lines and set some of the telegraph machines on fire. That there was just massive, like it set them back like so much to where it's like if you know if something like that hit the world now, where everything is basically ran on a grid space, it'd knock out not only like your electrical grid, it'd knock out your communications because of satellites, it'd knock out, I mean, basically everything. Like it's kind of one of those things that really kind of freaks you out because it's like how long would it take to get all that back up and running because they'd have to rebuild it from the ground up.
Yeah, there was one that we missed by nine days being in the direct line of hitting it. And I think it was in the last, I told you the other day, when I looked this up, it's like in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
That would have been bigger than this one, I think, that holy you're reading crap. About. Yeah. It would have like fried everything. Then, yeah, what would happen?
Yeah.
Because like most cities have only like 2 or 3 days food supply in the city.
Yeah. Well, nobody stocks up like what they used to. Like, you know, back.
You had the root cellar and you got all your food stuff stored in there.
You'd get prepared for the winter because you weren't going to be able to go to the grocery store and just walk down the produce aisle and pick up your lettuce, tomato, carrots, and, you know, cabbage or.
I forgot to turn my phone off.
You know.
Yeah.
No, But yeah, the effects of that today, I would say, would be 100 times worse than what it was in 1859.
How quick would society break down because they're not going to immediately get the power grid back up? If it was like a big event,
yeah,
fried everything, all phones being rendered useless, the whole satellites being taken out,
even your landline wouldn't work.
Yeah. You know? How long would it take for things just to go chaotic?
I would say almost instant, unless they were set up something like martial law or whatever. And even then, I mean, you know, the information was enough to be like, I might need to go out and get a bow, you know, something like that, and start learning how to use that. I've never been good with a bow. I can say that. I can shoot real well, but like, good grief. I'm like, yeah.
You'd learn quick. I told you, and I wasn't joking. I think I'd trap rabbits and raise them.
Yeah.
Cause you'd have a really quick, I mean, it's not going to feed a lot of people.
It'd be a sustainable food source. Yeah,
that and chickens.
Yeah. That and chickens because rabbits reproduce so fast. And whenever we say, you know, you've heard that, I'm sure everybody's heard like, you know, like reproduce like rabbits, you know, like, good. Of course, it's not like what's usually the term that's thrown in there at first, but
that's the term I use.
Yeah, in a good wholesome world, we use the term reproduce like rabbits.
Yeah.
But anyways, rabbits, and I was like, you know what, dude, that's actually a good idea. Even though I hate rabbits, rabbits are cute and cuddly and all like that, but try to pick one up and they scratch the crap out of you, man.
Oh, I thought you were saying you hate them eating. I'll eat a rabbit.
I've never eaten a rabbit
before. Tastes like chicken.
I've never eaten rabbit before.
The rabbit I had tastes like chicken. Yeah, some people, when I was a kid down the road, they raised rabbits to eat.
Really?
I didn't know that's what I was eating when I got there. And then they said, this is rabbit. I'm like, okay. It tasted good.
That's awesome.
They fried it.
Every time I think of that, I think Hoss and Pfeffer. Hoss and Pfeffer from the Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes. Bugs Bunny, like the one dude was always trying to catch Bugs Bunny to turn him into Hoss and Pfeffer.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even know what the hell Hoss and Pfeffer is, but I was like, hey, you know.
I'm trying to remember the names of the people. There's John Anthony West.
Yeah.
Was the one I listened to. Robert. I was most impressed with. There's Graham Hancock, of course.
Yeah. Which he keeps claiming himself is just nothing but a reporter.
And I get that. He's a questioner. He raises questions. I don't think I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all.
I don't think so either.
And he synthesizes, because if you're so specialized in your field, like from a historic point of view, history really can only be studied to a certain point when there are actual records that you can, written record began with civilization, right?
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, 6,000 years ago, civilization began. And according to history, then in prehistory is you're having to go off of other kinds of things, like the monuments and the artifacts that people dig up.
And
you know, Egypt, archaeologists and geologists and stuff like that, the stuff they find.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we don't know.
No, exactly. And that's one thing, another that there's been a lot of pushback on is now the artifacts and stuff. And, you know, they're starting to step back and look at things. And you sent me a message last night to watch that, the pyramids. What is it? The pyramids,
pyramid code.
Yeah. The pyramid code or whatever.
I watched a couple of episodes of it.
I started watching the first one and I was like, wow, they jump in like hardcore on the first one and actually have that Robert Schock.
Yeah. Schock and West.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about the when they believe that the Sphinx was built or whatever, so, or constructed or whatever you want to say.
It was really good to see, because, you know, I started, it's like you said, we had a discussion about this kind of thing last week, and then Martin chimed in and he enjoyed hearing it and said, you need to check out this.
Yeah.
And there was a certain episode where Graham Hancock, I can't remember the other guy's name, Randall.
Randall. I'll pull it up just a second, because I saved that.
And a guy from Skeptic, a magazine that is a Skeptic magazine.
Yeah.
And that kind of sucked me in right there, because they started throwing these things out there that I hadn't really heard about. I thought about the possibility of this, but then they start saying, like, Mesa Verde goes back 18,000 years down in South America.
Yeah.
There's places here. I mean, there's a near Louisville Lake back when they were building it. They found some things that were dated, they think, about 30,000 years ago.
Yeah.
There's a place over in the Carolinas, I think, or Virginia in the eastern part of the United States. Also, they have things that's like 20 to 30,000 years on the radiocarbon dating.
Yeah. Well, and so those guys on that was Graham Hancock, Randall Carlson, and Michael Shermer.
Yeah.
Michael Shermer was the, like, editor, runs the Skeptic magazine or whatever.
He was the one that...
I don't know.
What
do you tell me?
I didn't like him.
No, he just seemed too wormy, man. Like, he played a good part of a skeptic. Like,
he wasn't addressing the things they were bringing up.
Yeah.
He was trying to convolute and muddy the waters by grouping these ideas, these questions, with all these other people. And the fact is, there are lots of, I mean, the ancient aliens group and all that stuff. I don't know if they're aliens or not.
Yeah.
I'm not going there.
I'm not going to aliens, because, Robert Schock was talking about the, plasma discharges that happened during the, coronal events of the plasma hitting the atmosphere, almost making these images that look like, people like stick figures with their arms raised in the air.
Yeah.
That have been like shown in like cave paintings and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
And, saying that it could have, they've could have been one even back in the day that, that they, you know, that they've said that happened. That is obvious because there's these cave paintings. Of course, people like to claim that as aliens, but even on that podcast, Robert Schalk was saying they'd have actually reproduced the same effect in laboratories.
He was, he and the other guy that was with Hancock on that first one we listened to.
Yeah.
They impressed me more than anybody. Because they actually had, this is what they do.
They were all Robert Carlson guy with all his slides and stuff like that. And I've got the video. I'm going to watch the video. It's like 3.5 hours. I've already listened to the podcast, but I'm going to go back through it again. And I started it the other day and I'm kind of watching bits of it at a time because I get easily distracted here at the house.
Yeah.
So anytime it's like something that's like informative and stuff like that, I want to watch it in the comfort. I just stream YouTube onto my TV or whatever. I got a nice smart TV or whatever. I can send it straight from my phone to my TV. I definitely want to watch it in the comfort of my house, but like whenever it comes to something like that and it's 3+ hours, it's like there's a lot of stuff I need to be doing usually when I'm at home.
A lot. On that one, no, but I listened to like 2 or 3 more interviews with Hancock.
Yeah.
I find him an interesting fellow. He admits that he's made mistakes.
Yeah.
What he's doing is he's questioning. He's saying, and he's not even saying I'm the one that's discovered this. What he does is he's reporting on what other people are finding mostly. Yeah. Like he goes out and he makes it understandable for us.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, they all don't agree. Like he's really, really hardcore married to this idea that it was a comet event.
Yeah.
That did some things. Schalk says no, it was this solar flare. Could have been both.
Yeah.
Could have been that and a volcanic eruption, you know, that had, was part of the megafauna mass extinction.
Yes.
There all kinds of things could have happened in the same time and probably did happen.
Yeah.
Cause we do know that these things have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Robert Carlson, his was that he wasn't really supporting of either theories. Well, he was on with Graham Hancock, but he wasn't really supporting the theory of a comet impact or anything like that. Yeah. He was to an extent. Mainly his was, he was a geologist and he was, part of his thing was defending the Sphinx being older than what it is. And then the scab lands up around, in Washington State. Yeah. With the major flooding. And if you look at that and it's kind of crazy because if you actually look at the area, you can see that there was a huge flood that came through there at one point in time. And it's like, wow, dude, it's like, especially with the aerial pictures of it. That's what gets me is like, you see the aerial pictures.
It looks like
you can
see water the water flow that happened on a massive scale. Yeah. And the same thing happened all week long. So I just did cause I was listening at work. I couldn't watch anything. So when I watched that first episode of the Pyramid Code last night, I could actually see the erosion they were talking about coming into the enclosure from up on the plateau. It makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and if they do know from the geologic record that there has been a dry period for like the last 6,000 years, but about 9700 BC, when they're saying the last ice age ended, there was a lot of rain in that area. Why deny it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, to me, it's almost one of those things where, especially if you look at the pictures, it's not just a possibility. It's pretty much fact. Like, if you look at it and you can see the evidence there, and I'm not even an educated person. Like, I don't have any sort of degree in this, but like, you know, I've done my fair share of walking around and seeing where water runs off of a side of a cliff or whatever and see what it does.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a, let me see if I can find it here. There's just, and I've been seeing more and more things like this, articles. Like in Egypt, they just undid a pyramid that, here it is. Dozens of cat mummies found in a 6,000-year-old tombs in Egypt. That's going to predate or right about the period that they're saying all this happened, I guess, what, to 2500 BC to now is like 4,500 years.
Oh, wow.
This is a 6,000-year-old, and they've also got elaborate, like, statues.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's, and I was reading a thing earlier, civilization doesn't just happen. This high ability doesn't just happen. Like the ability to build the Sphinx.
That was another.
It wasn't like they just automatically like, oh, let's build this Sphinx. No, they had to have been, the ability had been developing for a long time.
Yeah.
And the cognitive ability of the people had been at a high level. I mean, let's not even get into the astronomical stuff because I can't even fathom that.
Oh yeah.
The calculations and how all this stuff ties into
the cosmic
stuff. Oh yeah. Stars.
Yeah. And one of the things they said is that, you know, one of the things that Robert Shaw claims is that the head that's on the Sphinx now is not the head that was originally on it. Yeah,
he's saying it was a lion.
Yeah, that it was a lion head, Leo, or I can't remember what the, I lost
Leo, him. Yeah. During the time, he's saying it was built.
Yeah.
It would have been facing the constellation
Leo. Yeah. Let me go to his website.
And they can actually tell, through programs that's what at 12,500 years ago when they're saying it was built, that would have been facing that.
Yeah.
That constellation.
So, his theory is, the Great Sphinx, she was the lioness Mehit, M-E-H-I-T. I'm probably saying it wrong. It's probably Met.
Met. I think that's something how they like said that. It, maybe.
Who guarded the ancient archive. Now, that was one of the things they said that they did when they took, I can't remember the tools that he said that he used, and I know we're doing a horrible job at doing this right now, but like, I don't care because it's something that's been like I said, me and Michael went down the rabbit hole. I guess it started for me on Tuesday. I probably listened
to about 16 hours. I had every intention of starting the Dresden Files most recent book.
Yeah.
And I spent every hour when I was at work listening to interviews about this.
Well, and see, that's the thing. Like I went to work on Monday and I was like, okay, I'm almost done with Old Man's War, so I'm going to finish up Old Man's War, and then I'm going to jump into The Expanse. Well,
yeah,
I listened to my podcast that I listen to. That I always listen to those things first thing on Monday, and there's like four of them. So I listen to those. That takes up the most part of the day. I only had like an hour and something left of Old Man's War. Finished up that hour and something, and then it was basically time to go home. So go home, and that was whenever Martin messaged us or posted some on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. So I downloaded those podcasts that he suggested. And then after that I didn't even get a chance to start The Expanse. I was looking forward to going into work on Tuesday and starting up The Expanse and just getting lost in Nemesis game and just like being like, The Expanse is here. I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And next thing you know,
this happened.
Yeah, this happened. Yeah,
I don't think we're doing justice to.
Oh no!
All the different things that are the information overload.
Yeah, and what gets me also is the safeguarding by the Egyptologists and stuff like that, and the Egyptian government itself, to where they, you know, like he said that they knew about this. They did some studies around the Sphinx to try to support their claims of it being water erosions, that the water that you know, from floods coming out of the Ice Age, basically. And that whenever they were doing these studies on it, they found basically like a secret chamber around the haunches of the rump is what he claimed.
Yeah.
Around the rump of the Sphinx, and then one at the front of the Sphinx. Under the left paw. Now they knew, apparently they knew about the one at the rump and hadn't really said anything. It wasn't highly publicized. Let's put it that way. But they didn't know anything about the one at the front. And they're positive that this chamber is there and they won't allow them to dig or see what's in the chamber. And that their theory is that this is some sort of archive, maybe almost like a library, not necessarily to the extent of like the Library of Alexandria that burned, but could possibly hold lots of secrets. I mean,
I hate to use the word rumor. There's been suspicions about this great archive for a long time. There's not been any proof that it even exists, but it could exist somewhere.
Yeah.
And all they really even need to do is be allowed to drop a fiber optic cable down in there they can use to video.
Yeah. Just drop a fiber optic cable down there, tiny pinpoint with enough light to see what the chamber might hold.
Yeah. But they don't. They don't want them to.
They don't want them to. It's kind of like they found another chamber inside the Great Pyramid, and they try to say that it's not there or whatever. And I can't remember the way that they did it. Something about I'm not even going to try to remember the name of the particles that get shot throughout space, and they can
particles.
I can't remember. I'm not even going to try to butcher it, but they, you know. It gets filtered out through stone or whatever. Yeah. And so
like they're passing through us right now, but when it hits stone, they can kind of make a map of
exactly. Yeah.
The stone and empty space.
And so they set up millions of dollars of equipment around the Great Pyramid and found out that there's another chamber towards the top of the pyramid that they don't know what's there or what it's for or whatever. But the Egypt government's telling them, nope, your guys are all just a bunch of crazy idiots. Quit questioning and in fact, shut down your project.
Yeah.
That they were trying to get them to, or trying to make them shut down their project, or the Egyptologist went to the actual Egyptian government trying to shut them down.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Like, what are you afraid that you're going to find up there? And part of me goes like, is it religion that somebody's afraid that it's going to debunk somebody else's religion or, because why be scared of knowledge?
Right.
But that's an age old question in itself, because like, you know, for ages and ages and ages, you couldn't own a Bible.
Yeah.
You know, it was guarded information.
Yeah.
But that's how you keep your public at bay, is by restricting the flow of knowledge that's funneled down to
them. Yeah. Yeah. It's good questions.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It blows my mind, man. It's crazy. It's crazy. Like, and it's just like, it's gotten me to the point to where it's like, if I go to school now and I start working on a degree, how old would I be whenever I finish it and get all this way I can start looking into it myself? And
Indiana Hammond. Right. You'd be over there with your bull whip.
Yeah, I'd be about the same age as what Harrison Ford is right now whenever I get all finished with it. Okay, I can start studying now. Or I'd have to talk like Harrison. Be like, ugh, these kids.
Harrison Ford.
Yeah, by then they would have already probably opened it up and found out that like the secret plans and how they did it was all, you know, inside the left paw of the Sphinx, and they're like, hey, this is how we built all this stuff. Just call up Ralph over here. He's three doors to the left.
Yeah, that's another crazy thing. I've watched over the years, I've watched lots of shows where they're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
We're so smart and so capable and think so highly of ourselves. Fact is, we have no idea how they did it, because we can't do it. We can't replicate doing it.
And that's, I think that's what frustrates, I know it frustrates me, because I know it's like, we haven't ever replicated this, even with the plans that were supposedly left behind on how they did this. And it's, we still can't get it done. I do have a little bit of a theory that I just wanted to like say real fast, because, you know, you always hear the term slaves, like, oh, well, they use slaves to move the stones. Oh, well, they use slaves to build it. They use slaves to set the obelisks or set the stones in place or whatever. And now this is coming from me, who's definitely not an educated person. I don't have a college degree or anything like that. But for the longest time, people always thought that it was slaves that rode the ships of Vikings. Come to find out it wasn't slaves. It was volunteers, because Vikings were very nomadic people. I won't say nomadic like they had the base of home operation, but they were traders.
Yeah.
And it's known that they would, you know, they would go out and go into different ports and trade, and had been known to go as far up as into China. You know?
Really?
Yeah. And one of their traits was that whenever they would sail into port and they didn't have the heads on their boats, they were there to trade. But if they had the heads on their boats, they were there to raid. So it was kind of like, hey, we're going to give you a heads up that we're coming in to kill and pillage everybody. But anyways, getting back to my initial thought was that, you know, come to find out these were volunteers that were on the boats because they wanted to, you know, share in the wealth of the trade and of the raiding in itself. But not only that, like they were a seagoing culture. They were explorers.
Yeah.
In essence. Who's to say that the people that helped build the pyramids were slaves. Maybe they wanted to take part. Obviously, the culture in itself to me seems like it was rooted in architecture. Like you see all these carvings and phenomenal carvings, like insane, elaborate carvings that would have taken so much time and so many people to do it. It seems to me like the almost like the society might have been like steeped in architecture. Who's to say that these were slaves? They might have been volunteers.
Well, even the official position of the guy that was ahead of the head of antiquities in Egypt, Awasi or whatever his name was. I've seen him on stuff. That's his thing. He said they weren't slaves.
Yeah.
No, that's what he says. And then on the show we watched last night, there was an older guy, an Egyptian guy there, and said there wasn't slaves.
Yeah.
These were builders. And he said they used techniques to do this that we don't understand.
Yeah. See, I got 20 minutes into that first episode, but I did see Robert Schock on there. Yeah. And I was like, I like that guy. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been one of those things where it's like, wow. Like it's, I feel like.
You notice the, watching the show, that's what I was going to say earlier also, seeing the things they're talking about is very important. Because you would think it would be in reverse, right? You would think the ancient civilization that is supposed to be more primitive and not skilled would have started out with small stones.
Yeah.
And moved up over time to the giant stones. No, it's the exact opposite. They're the ones with the huge, like impossible to move. Like we barely can move stuff like that with our equipment that we have now. It's pushing the boundaries of what's capable. And then later civilizations that would do repair work would use smaller ones and then get to like Roman times and it's little tiny stone.
Yeah. And it seems like it was almost like it was regressing almost a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. They brought it up. I'm not sure exactly which one it was, but they brought it up in one of the podcasts that they said that it is exactly just like how it was with the Romans. Like you take London or Londonium or whatever you want to call it. London way back in the time of the Romans where they had aqueducts and all sorts of like just amenities for the people in London. Well, the Roman Empire fell, they pulled out, and then basically everybody with the knowledge that knew how to repair it, how to work it, had left.
Yeah.
And so it goes into disrepair and the society in itself has to start over. And that's what, you know, and they're going to bring up Göbekli Tepe. I always screw up that word.
I love that. Oh, dude. We haven't even mentioned that, but that to me that was the most, is the most,
that's the most fascinating one of all
thing they've brought up. Yeah.
Because what they say, it was like 7,000 years older than Stonehenge.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That Stonehenge in itself, they said it's odd because it's so much older than Stonehenge, and Stonehenge is very archaic to where it's very rudimentary with the stones and the way it's placed and put together. Yeah. And then you look at Göbekli Tepe and you have these intricate carvings, this 3D carvings. So whenever we say 3D carvings, and it's do yourself a favor, go to Google right now while I'm talking about this and look up images for it because it's amazing work. Whenever you start thinking about the time, because what it is 3D carving. So they've actually taken the stone and carved out the negative area of the space around the carving so that way the carvings are actually raised off the stone face.
Oh, yeah. And to make that work takes a lot of planning and precision because you can't be off because you're next to another boulder that's going to be the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It has to be planned out precisely.
Yes.
That's fascinating to me. One of the reasons that people, it's so easy to dismiss these ideas in the early 90s was because there was no trace of anything older that they had found yet.
Yeah.
Then they find this in the 90s and it's changed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Because they said, well, what culture? There's no civilization before that could do that. Well, yeah, there is. And look at this statue. I mean, it's called the Urfa Man statue.
Oh, yeah.
Urfa is near Göbekli Tepe in Turkey.
Yeah.
It's where Abraham, it's associated with the Hebrew patriarch Abraham.
Okay.
Supposedly there's some sites tied to him that are really significant. I'd never heard of, but it is. And this statue, if I can get it to blow up for you, this was from
Oh, holy
Urfa,
crap.
Man, that is from the same time period as is from Urfa, which is near Göbekli. I can't say it, Tepe.
Yeah, it's hard to say, man. Göbekli Tepe.
Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I was trying to say it last night.
That is a level of sophistication.
That's crazy. Like, it's even got his fingers, like, carved out.
And that's onyx for eyes.
Oh, wow. That gave me chill bumps when I first looked at it.
It's not primitive. They're not, like, primitive hunter-gatherers that can do that.
Yeah. That's, wow, dude. Part of the whole thing was Graham Hancock had a, with his theory of, comet, part of his theory of the comet strike to, and he claims that it hit somewhere in the North Americas and that there were like
significant
impacts on the ice shelf. So there's no necessary craters because it would have hit the ice shelf of the North American ice cap. But his part of his theory with that was that there was a hidden, I won't say hidden, but a lost civilization that helped the people of Göbekli Tepe. I just screwed it up. Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah.
Because the people of Göbekli Tepe were shown to be a hunter gatherer society. And they're actually saying that now they're, what is it? Something about like they were like the first agricultural. Agriculturalist. Well, my brain's just fried.
Not long after Göbekli. Let's call it G.
Yeah, we'll just call it GT.
Agriculture started developing in that area not long after that.
Yeah. So, and the tools and the precision and everything like that, like the society shouldn't have had, but all of a sudden they did. So part of Graham Hancock's theory was that there was a lost civilization that kind of helped the Göbekli Tepians. Hey, look at that.
They're good.
Yeah. The people of the Göbekli Tepe area, like figure out how to do these carvings and to start agriculturalists and all like that. But it's all like, said it's all fascinating and just it's stuff that I could sit
it's
there
a puzzle
and spend
is what it is.
Oh god,
we're,
yeah.
Like you said, we're not educated on at all. When we're probably getting a lot of stuff off a little bit.
I'm doing a bad job of regurgitating information that I've picked up over the past week.
Yeah,
and I want to do a better job at it. So we'll have a whole nother episode dedicated to this right here
and tie a little bit more into what we know about the things because there's lots of megalithic sites in North America, in South America that I wasn't aware of.
Oh yeah.
I knew about Caddo Mounds. I knew about the other mound builders like in the Missouri area and stuff like that, but there's other things that are really old here.
Oh god.
Like the Anasazi civilization that they lasted over 1,000 years.
Holy crap.
From 200 BC to about 1,000 AD when the Navajo and Pueblos moved in and something happened where they went into, and they were huge. I mean, they were thousands and thousands of people. They had homes. They actually had big homes on top of like mountains and mesas and stuff. And then either they got defeated or disease or something happened.
Yeah. Yeah,
go to the grocery store and get some Anasazi beans in memoriam of them. They're the black and white beans.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, part of, and going back to what I was talking about earlier, when we were talking about the coronal events and stuff like that, they said that that Robert Schalk, one of his theories is that would have caused one of the mass extinctions was that massive coronal
expulsion.
Said that it would have been so high that the radiation would have been so high, it would have been killing off people and animals and things like that. And the only way that you would have been able to escape the radiation is by rock, because rock is a natural filter for the sun's radiation or whatever. So just to kind of put a little pinpoint on the end of a thing that I talked about 15, 20 minutes ago.
He also said that could have also caused, because another thing that caused these little artifacts they're finding, like the glass and stuff like that, lightning can do it. Yeah. Well, lightning would not be that massive scale. Schalk says a big, big, big solar flare hitting the Earth would cause massive lightning strikes all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
So that, you know, and who knows who's right.
And that's one of those things of where it's like, what type of, like, it could be a storm on the size that we have no idea about. We could have had massive lightning strikes, you know. And then again, it could have been a comet. Could have been an asteroid.
Could have been everything.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to exclusively be one thing. I mean, the Ice Age ended, what, 9700 BC or something like that.
Yeah.
11,000 years ago. And everything kind of comes after that. We can pretty much agree that things really started moving after the, I mean, the Ice Age was really the big hold up, probably keeping us down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's also, God, I can't remember the name of the volcano. Have you heard of, it's a Toba event?
I haven't, but
it was so, terrific, not in a good way, but terrible of an event that it actually might have caused a bottleneck in human, population, like
kill off
so many people that we got down to really low numbers again. And we kind of had to struggle our way back up again out of that.
Yeah.
I think it's Toba.
I think you're right. Cause I think I heard that and they were talking about the, said that you could almost see the results of it by the linguists, by the language or whatever that developed out of it or whatever.
I learned about that from that book that Stephen recommended a long time ago, The Atlantis Gene.
Oh, really?
Which is really packed with science.
Oh,
lots of science in it. It's an action adventure novel, basically, like Crichton or Patterson or somebody would do.
Yeah.
But it's filled with a lot of really based on science, kind of the Toba super eruption 75,000 years ago.
Oh, wow.
See, people came out of Africa anywhere from 90 to 125,000 years ago. That's where we started.
Yeah.
Spreading out. And then 75,000 years ago, this event happened. And they're saying that really was a huge impact on us. 74,100 to 75,900 years ago in Sumatra, Indonesia.
Okay.
Another cool thing, when the Ice Age happened, we talked about Beringia, the Bering Land.
Yeah, the Bering Land Bridge.
Well, okay. And this is amazing to me too. So much of our history is under the ocean. If the water levels, like say here in Texas, I looked up and saw a map of what it would have looked like here. Instead of going to Galveston Island and hanging out like I love to do.
Yeah.
If I went to Galveston, I would just be going to this hill, and then the coast would be a long ways out into the Gulf of Mexico.
Really?
So people would have been living a lot closer all over the world. In fact, I think Hancock or one of those people said that the amount of land that got covered by the end of that last ice age with rising seas is equal to the landmass of like China.
Yeah, something like that. Like it's so insane. It's a ridiculous.
Atlantis.
Yeah.
There probably was one of these. That's another thing Hancock did in one of the interviews. He said Atlantis probably is laying out there like where the Azores is.
Yeah.
It just got covered up.
Yeah. Just a little line.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting stuff, man. It's definitely like, oh my God. I could sit here and talk about this for a whole nother hour.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just love hearing that people that know this stuff.
Oh, I know
it. And I know. Well, they might be wrong. They might be wrong. I'm not saying I think they're 100% right. I'm just saying
it's fascinating either way. I like hearing the other aspects and other theories and other thoughts about like what we know about prehistory.
Well, it's right now. I was looking at some old history books I had on Texas history.
Yeah.
Clovis culture was the thing.
Like they kept saying in that one, Clovis number one, Clovis first all the time.
Enough, like I said earlier, a lot of work's been done and you can't
dispute.
This is solid work. Yeah. There is a pre-Clovis culture by a couple of thousand years at least.
Yeah.
And we don't know much about them, I guess, at all. That's like the next needle in a haystack thing, I guess it is, because you don't know where these. You're going to assume you got a good idea. It's going to be near waterways because rivers were the source of life.
Yeah. But they've changed so much.
Yeah. They do change.
Yeah.
I could go out and plow a field tomorrow and I could overturn something and maybe, you know,
yeah,
if I could find something.
Well, that's what's crazy because you remember, I guess like after, you know, y'all had to move and Ruthann and Sydney and every part of the family had to move. I think it's like right before they started opening up the lake, they found a bunch of stuff. I think it was around Ruth Ann and Sydney's place, like old pottery and crap like
really?
That. Yeah. And had like special digs that I think like delayed the opening of the lake because they had found like these sites basically like feet from where their house was, man.
Yeah.
That's just like crazy that you never would have thought that it's like, oh, well, the cellar that we've been riding the big wheel down the door on that we used to get in trouble for riding the big wheel off of, you know, 20 feet from that, you know, so many feet underneath the earth was some clay pot shards.
Yeah, and stuff that's like amazing.
That. Yeah.
And then they ended up moving somewhere that's also equally significant.
Yeah.
Where three Wichita Indian villages were that were like centers of Native culture. Like the Plains tribes would come up there. The Caddos from the east would come up there. The French were there.
Yeah.
And, it's mistakenly known as Spanish Fort.
Yeah.
The Spanish never had a fort. They went up there and got their butts handed to them by the French and the Native Americans that were there.
Yeah.
That's a whole episode in history that you can go down a rabbit hole because, the Spanish had, been getting harassed by, of course, the Apaches and different tribes, and they wanted to like set a message. So they went up there. They're going to send a message, and they got all the way up there and saw a French flag flying over like the village. And I guess they might have even been cannons there. And they just had to, they never, that kind of much ended a lot of Spanish attempts to push up
into the northern
part. Yeah.
Huh.
And
I didn't know that about Spanish Fort.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very cool. And that people there still said, yeah, there was a Spanish fort here. No. It's misunderstood.
Yeah.
The name is wrong.
Yeah.
If anything, it should be the Talboyas Indian tribes live there. Three large, two were on the north side of the river, right in the same vicinity. It's like a huge complex.
Yeah.
Of Native culture. And then there was one village on the south side. I think that's where they live. And when they first moved out there, they would like look at fire ant, not fire ant, the big red harvester ant mounds you could go up to. They would find the beads, the little beads that the ants would be bringing them up, building their nest.
Really?
Little tiny blue and white beads.
That's
that
crazy.
Had been traded there. Probably got them from I'm thinking the French, or these might have been even something made by the first yeah. peoples. It's a really cool area.
That's neat. Yeah.
You didn't know that, did you?
No,
it's huge.
I would have been going out there looking at all the red ant beds, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those red ant beds get
huge.
They
found all kinds of neat stuff up there.
That's cool.
And you go up there with a metal, no telling what you could find.
Yeah.
There was a place that we have this, misnomer that, oh, history began when the English colonies.
Yeah.
No. The Spanish and the Native Americans had been here for thousands. The Native Americans, of course, thousands of years. Spanish had been here long time.
Oh, God, yeah.
And exploring. And, you know, it's not virgin territory. The trails, a lot of the roads we follow today are the roads they followed back then.
Oh, yeah. Well, in like some of the, you know, a lot of the, I remember my Texas history in seventh grade, basically started with William Travis.
Sad.
Yeah, it started basically, I won't say William Travis, but sorry, with Stephen F. Austin.
Stephen F. Austin, yeah.
You know, it basically started with Stephen F. Austin. And
I remember, yeah, same thing. They say, oh, there used to be Indians that lived here.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, the Spanish and Mexicans. But then we showed up.
Yeah. And we made everything perfect.
No, we didn't.
But that's what gets me. That's what that's what drives me so much is I want to know more about the people that came down off the Bering Land Bridge that followed the nice little path through the glacier that came down through the, what they call it, the Kansas Passage or something like that.
Yeah, there was periodically this passage, would open up along the side of the Rocky Mountains where they could get down to the Great Plains.
Yeah.
Yeah. And spread around.
And spread around and down into Texas around like the Waco area. And yeah, I'm fascinated by it because
I'm even more fascinated with people that made it all the way to South America.
Yeah.
Cause they're still saying that like, a lot of those sites are, I mean, except for the Mesa Verde, which is, 18,500 years ago, maybe they don't really have a lot of old sites. That's still the same time period they were spreading. I mean, how long does it take to move from, the what was the name of that town up there, right at the edge of the Bering Sea? Anyhow, let's just say the north of the coast of Alaska. Oh, you're talking Alaska. About
like Nome?
Nome. How long would it take to travel on foot, surviving, down to Tierra del Fuego?
Years. It would have to be years.
Thousands of years, you would think, just migrating.
Yeah. Tierra del Fuego. Sorry, it made me think of a song. Do the don'ts. Don't the do's. I roll the rights and I false the truths. Drink all night and I have the blues.
Oh, man.
Because never been wanted like I want to be wanted by you. The Refreshments, man. That's an old Bottle and Fresh Horses album. Both those albums were great. Sorry, I totally sidetracked just a second, but you said Tierra del Fuego and it made me think of the song. But we're at an hour and five already. It doesn't feel like an hour and five. No. My butt's not even tired. I feel like
we've just been rambling, but I needed to talk to somebody.
Yeah, we had to.
I think I've been annoying my wife all week. I'm like, did you know?
It's funny
about this.
It's funny. Whenever you walked in, I was like, there's stuff I want to talk to you about, but I was like biting my tongue. I was like, let's watch King of the Hill real fast. I watched this because there was stuff I wanted to talk about, but I wanted to talk about it here while it was recording instead of there, whatever is damn it, should have been talking about that back there in the Star Wars room with the freaking mics running instead. But it's been an interesting week. It's made work week fly by. Oh god, yeah. It's funny because that one podcast, and we're talking about the Joe Rogan podcast. You can find it. You can
download yourself. And please, if this sounds interesting, please do.
Yeah.
I don't always like listening to Joe Rogan. I can do him every once in a while. I shouldn't say stomach.
Yeah.
His podcasts are long.
They are three hours plus. Yeah.
He puts out sometimes two a week. Sometimes what I like about him is he is a questioner. Now, when he starts talking about his psychedelic drugs and all this and how I kind of tune out a little bit.
Yeah.
Cause he's really, him and Hancock are both really in the big of that also. So if you hit an episode, unless you're just interested in it, because it is curious stuff they're talking about. I'm not going to go drop DMT tomorrow, though. It's not my style. But they do go to some interesting places.
Yes,
and he's really, that's, I'll say this for Joe Rogan, he's very, very, very smart. And he questions, and he doesn't have an agenda. He just wants to know,
he just wants the information.
He's not shutting he'll talk to anybody.
Yeah.
But he wants an answer. If he asks you a question, he wants you to be honest and don't give him a bunch of crap.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of funny because he seemed like he got kind of upset with that, guy that did the Skeptics magazine or whatever.
He did get mad at him.
Yeah.
Lerner or whatever his name was.
Robert. No, it was the Shermer.
Shermer, yeah.
Michael Shermer.
Well, something happened during that episode.
Yeah.
He was being a little brat.
Oh god, yeah.
Whiny. He was being I hate to say it, my teenage daughter argues like that. If she doesn't have much footing, she will just and she's great at debating. She'll pick at stuff.
Yeah.
And not listen. He was doing these little whiny, I know you are, what am I? That kind of thing.
And it's kind of funny.
But something happened at the end.
Yeah.
It's like him and Hancock must have gone outside and had a discussion.
Yeah.
Because he came back in saying, you know what? He had a completely different tone about it. He says, look, I am open to learning. If this is right, I will accept it. If you can show me more stuff. He had a completely different attitude near the end of the interview.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was kind of funny because you could definitely tell the change in attitude. And I was like, did Rogan, we both know Rogan's a big dude.
Oh yeah. He could take you out in 5 seconds.
Oh
he's trained.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But another thing that happened is it got really heated with the guy that was on Skype.
Oh,
I kept forgetting the guy, Robert. Larson.
Yeah, Robert Carlson.
I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
They were getting heated.
Oh, yeah.
Heated. And then something happened in that conversation. It's like, look, at the end of the day, this is not a personal thing.
Yeah. We're colleagues.
And I want you to know that I will I want to correspond and talk to you more about this. Maybe you have some evidence, because Carlson just kept saying, I've got this data. I've got these images. I've got these tests done. I've got all this information. No one's listening to me.
Yeah. And maybe that'll be the turning point. Maybe that was the turning point. Maybe it's starting to catch
paradigm shift. Science goes through paradigm shifts where not accepted knowledge is this. Somebody comes along, they execute them back in the long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Or you're ridiculed and put in a position where you can't make a living and you end up becoming a pseudoscientist nut.
Yeah.
But if you're passionate about it, you can. People have changed the way we look at the world.
Yeah.
And this is what's happening. We're finding evidence that there are maybe not high civilizations, but people were doing a lot more than we thought.
Oh, God. People were a lot smarter than what we thought that they were. Well, I'm going to start wrapping us up. I've got something here I want to read real fast. It's a little bit of sad news, but good news at the same time. And I shared it with you the other day. Ignoble howlers.
Oh, you're going to bring this up?
Yep.
Oh.
Ignoble howlers. When I set out to continue the Red Rising series with the Iron Gold trilogy, which is good news. That's the good thing I took out of it. So this next book isn't the final book. With the Iron Gold trilogy, I made a deal with myself not to violate the trust of readers and the relationships with the characters by sacrificing quality for quantity. Far too many times I've had my reading heart broken by a series that dilute their strength and initial message. I do not intend for that to happen here. Each new book of the Red Rising saga must mean something. Each book should explain the scope, the drama, the stakes of the world. Else why spend my time on spinning sphere writing it. I don't understand the sphere, but anyways. Dark Age is a hybrid monster. Golden Sun Fury meets Iron Gold complexity on a steroid amphetamine cocktail free falling from 20,000 meters. Hmm. It's a hell of a joy to write, and it is evolving into my favorite book in the series. However, in order for me to grow into its ultimate, for it to grow into its ultimate form, it needs more time. For this reason, I'm asking y'all to give me an extension. I need a bit more time to finish writing Dark Age. Random House will reschedule the book release for July 9th, 2019. I know this will disappoint some of you, but far more disappointing would be a book that does not fulfill the promise of what it could be. Thank you for your understanding, your sad-faced emoji, and your enduring mania for this peculiar world of war gods, misfits, and space Vikings. Hail Libertas, PB. Pierce Brown. So
the book's been pushed.
The book's been pushed back. It's sad news, but it's exciting news at the same time.
Yeah.
Whenever his description,
the of amphetamine fuel.
Yeah. His description of Golden Sun Fury meets Iron Gold complexity on a steroid amphetamine cocktail free falling from 20,000 meters. I'm excited, dude.
Like, yeah.
We kept saying, like, this one has to, like, this one's, this is gonna, I don't even know. I'm not even gonna try to speculate. But, like I said, there's two bits of information out of there that I call good information. One is the Iron Gold trilogy.
Yeah.
And then just a description of the book coming from his own words. Sucks that it's being pushed back to July, but, like I commented on it, you know, take as much time as you need. I'll look forward to reading it. And it made me so excited whenever I looked up and it said, Pierce Brown liked your comment. Yeah. And I was like, that's awesome. Yeah. I've got a new buddy.
So your buddy's with him now. Once he's done with the book, you can just say, hey, yeah, your buddy.
Yeah. Hey, why don't you come on here and let's chat a little bit. Why don't you come on, 2BT all into family? Okay.
That's
so exciting. Yeah. But like I said, it's sad news. But good news, Disney streaming finally got a name. It's called Disney Plus. Oh. Look forward to being in late 2019. There's going to be a new Star Wars series on it. That's a prequel to Rogue One. Basically, it's like about Captain Cassian. So they're calling it a prequel to Rogue One, but it's going to be about Captain Cassian. I'm stoked. I don't know about other people. I've seen mixed feelings on it. I loved Rogue One. Really got intrigued by the character of Captain Cassian, especially since he says, I've been in the fight since I was five. Now, that doesn't mean that he was in the fight with the rebels, that he was fighting for the rebels, but he'd been in the fight against the Empire since he was five, or since, you know, fighting whatever. But, you know, if you enjoy the show, help us grow. That's my new tagline, by the way.
Help us grow.
It took me like all of 3 seconds to come up with it, so I'm still excited about it.
It should be.
If you enjoy the show, help us grow. Go by and read us. Write a review. Just be kind. We like 5 stars. Wink, wink. It doesn't have to be 5 stars, but, you know, we'd appreciate it. Go to nerdylegion.com/audible to sign up. Get 2 free books and a free month-long membership. You don't have to keep the membership, but you get to keep the books. If you liked what we were talking about today, Graham Hancock has multiple books on there.
He's got novels and he has his nonfiction journalism. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, if any
of he has some pretty wicked books about Montezuma.
Yeah. I was actually looking at some of those and I was like, oh man, like that might have to be something to get into here in a little bit after finish up The Expanse and waiting on Dark Ages to come out.
So much to read.
I know it, right, dude? It's just like, oh my God, it's crazy. Anyways, Audible has thousands of audiobooks along with speeches and a ton of other programs to listen to all at your fingertips. All you gotta do is download it, put it in your ear holes, and your day's great. If you want to get in touch with us between episodes, you can email us at the number 2btshow@gmail.com. That's 2btshow@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter. That's 2btshow. That's at, of course, the number 2btshow. Or you can follow us on Facebook at 2BT. With that being said, I'm David.
I'm Michael.
2BT. Signing out.
Adios.
Fayo con Diaz.
Thank you. You're too generous. Oh, thank you. Oh, really. That's too much.
I don't say goodbye. I say may the force be with you.
Awesome. Later, guys.
Ah! Oh, jeez.
Oh, heck yeah.
I'm just rubbing all over my lips.
Use your mind. You don't use your body. Where do we go with this?
I don't know, but... Exactly. That's 2BT style as we go off the rails all the blasting time.
I don't know if I should say that.
Nope. Nope. Yeah, you know.
It's going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, right. These views are not shared by the 2BT.
Good Lord. What? What made me this way? It is hot. It is hot. So hot. Kind of like me. It is hot.
Yeah, I like fish sticks. I like putting fish sticks in my mouth.
What?
Fish sticks.
Good God. Oh. Something went wrong somewhere or something went right somewhere.
Right.
There's a naked chicken there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I used to love her. Yeah. But I had to kill her. I used to love her. Oh, yeah, but I had to kill her.
Hey, I mean, I love you in all sense of the word, all of y'all. That's man, whatever. I'm the jerk that wrote a 1,000,000-word prequel to the real story.
Dude, I like...
Too well. Well,
I don't know my words. I just like looking at the funny.
You know your words. I don't know mine.
That whole alphabet thing confuses me.
Just do like I do. Give up. Just give up on everything. I don't care. The environment's dying. I don't care. Just give up.
Oh, my.
I don't know if this is fun for anybody listening, but it's not. Oh, my God.
You gotta play to win, man.
I wanna make love to you, woman. I wanna lay you down by the fire. Caress your womanly body. Make it bone and perspire.
Yeah. Water rum, cigarette rum. I can either A, clinch it, and hope that my body just reabsorbs it. Maybe it'll turn into a burp.
Burp. Yeah. Burp, burp.
Are you ready for your vasectomy?
Mike, edit this out.
Yeah. I want to be captain of the committee that makes sure you guys don't F this up.
I swear to God, dude, it came out with a vengeance, too. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I'm like the...
it's glorious. Yeah. Santa Claus is real.
Oh, well, look, he's not that bad of a dude.
Straight to the fart noises. There's only one day.
He's a little guy, red hair... that he likes to sing and play his lute.
I don't know, maybe it's my upbringing or something.
I don't know, it's just fun. I'm texting, be like, oh, well, you know, my feats are better than your feats.
And you're an old man and pretty much done.
There you go.
Yeah.
Dude.
Everything's better with reverb.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
Giant lump of wet dough. Yeah.
Where are you from? When I was like, Texas.
Oh, whoa. Well, how dare you say that to little Timothy?
Yeah.
By the way, spoilers.
Hey. I guess it's the Texas thing.
I love my family.
Excellent.
Oh, you want to be a tough guy? I'll be a tough, show what tough is.
Go home.
Dude, you mind if I sit over here? And he's like, dude, knock yourself out, man. It must be a Texas thing. Don't do that, by the way.
I'm having a brain freeze. Oh, no. And I'm like,
Ujaba of the heebie-jeebies. Face down in a gutter. No, won't admit defeat, though.
Well, this is not good.
Like, dude, I love it. I love it all.
Whoa, dude. Oh, my God.
Star Wars guys are crazy.
My butt has a cannon.
If you're going to go out, that's the way to do it.
I dig it. It belongs in a museum. Oh, dude, hurry up and get here.
Yeah. Man in black fled across the desert, and the gunslinger followed.
The Last Jedi. Run DMC.
Han, Luke, Leia.
R2 and 3PO.
Rey, Finn.
Yoda. Kenobi.
Poe.
Do or do not. There is no try. Well,
Chewbacca has to die.
The Palpatine.
It's Trey, you.
Chewbacca. You know R.A. Salvatore.
This is a good guy. This is a bad guy. This is a good guy. This is a bad guy.
Go. Dang it. Yeah. But, like, crap. I'm just, like, stuttering and rambling there. Beans are a wonderful fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot. The more you toot, the better you feel. So eat beans with every meal. I have a belief that if the more you fart, the longer you'll live.
No. You don't stop playing because you get old.
Yeah.
You get old because you stop playing.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boo.
Nerdy Legion.
NerdyLegion.com.
America. Center of equal daughters, equal sons. All alike and dear. Grow, ungrow, young or old. Strong, ample, fair, enduring, capable, rich, perennial with the earth, with freedom, law, and love.
Must she, must pass.
somebody.